Man, I wish we were just recording our phone call the other day. That would have been a great episode.
It's funny because now every time that we do talk, if it's like in that case, you call me to just talk through something that you're thinking about work-wise.
Yeah, it was like an architecture question. Yeah,
it turns into an episode.
Should just always hit the record button whenever we get on the phone. That sounds dangerous.
Yeah.
I had to let that one sit in my own head for a second.
Yeah.
So, oh.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh boy. Implications.
What did we talk about? I don't remember.
I couldn't tell you. It was productive.
I remember it was
something to do with the purchasing flow, I think, on Nest Notes.
Oh, yeah, because I just did that. The subscription stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, subscriptions. That's what it was.
Yeah, that's what it was.
Man, I tell you, Stripe is just a product that over and over and over, every time I have to do a new thing with it, I'm like, that was probably the best possible version of that I could have expected.
Yeah, Stripe has been amazing. Obviously we're using them for Design Collective, but we're using the Connect platform, which is great. Pretty much everything they're offering, like I've talked to several people and they would say something like, yeah, this was great, but I needed to do X and Y that wasn't supported out of the box. I've never run into that problem. What we're doing in Design Collective is kind of complicated, right? Because we're a middle person sending money to different parties.
Right. So you have the stores that are signed up and then people are paying the stores basically through you and you take a cut of it.
Right.
So, I mean, that's definitely more than just e-commerce for sure.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So none of the funds actually flows through any of our accounts. The stores, when someone buys something, they get paid immediately minus whatever commission. So there's like two setups, right? So there's like the commission setup where we take X percent of whatever sale. And then there's also a monthly membership fee. So a store could be on that and then we wouldn't take a commission. So I'm using both the Connect platform and the subscription platform. And it just works out of the box for me on both ends. So maybe I'm lucky, but neither of the things are trivial, I would say, and it's just been working for me. So
right, and the thing for me is that even when I don't fully grok how they want me to set something up yet or how I'm going to have to do a workaround for whatever thing I want to do, the docs are just goodness, they're impeccable. They're so good.
I think they're the gold standard, really. I see a lot of people kind of paralleling what Stripe is doing, especially with their API docs. I think the versioning stuff that they do is really cool and I would like to learn more about it. You know, like you log in or you even go to the API docs and it'll tell you, hey, your version is not the docs that you're actually reading. These are the docs that correspond to the version that you currently have selected.
Right. That system, I mean, is really kind of brilliant because otherwise it would just be so difficult for them to ever make any changes.
Yeah.
But by actually locking people into specific versions of the API, they've been able to do some really cool stuff. So I think that's just what an impressive company. I wasn't even planning to talk about them. They are the best, seriously.
Yeah, they are pretty great. I haven't had any problems. It's been awesome. And the Connect platform, we're actually using an OAuth flow. So that way stores that come on to our platform actually all create their own Stripe accounts. And it's been, there's a way that I could kind of hijack that and do it all myself, but I figured there's more important things to do than do that because Stripe provides their own kind of run through. It's just not, you know, specifically branded to your company. But even that, it's just like flawless. You know, a lot of our stores aren't necessarily that technically savvy and no one's had any problems onboarding. So I think that's a pretty big
testament. That's awesome. Yeah, that's very, very cool. Their widget kind of tools are really outstanding. I'm actually using Stripe Checkout, their JavaScript solution, for all of the purchase interactions on Nest Notes right now. So that's like customized print product purchases. So you can have a cart full of things and sales tax gets passed in and all that kind of stuff. And it's also the subscription payments. All of that is going directly through Stripe Checkout. So it's their UI for entering a card. You get automatic two-factor authentication for the payment. If someone has said they want to remember their card number, that's just built in. You just get that for free. And you get this super nice UI that is automatically internationalized and everything just works for everybody right out of the box. And that's such a powerful, awesome thing. And it's been flexible enough for me to do everything I've needed to with it so far.
Yeah. I mean, that all is awesome too. But I think on top of that, you get all of the research they've done in terms of UI, UX stuff for checkout, card forms, all that stuff. It's kind of like when I was working with Shopify a bunch at Octopus, a lot of clients would be like, hey, we want to change this, this, and this about the checkout page. And then I would have to say like, well, we can't do that. And here's why. And so I'd always point them to this article that Shopify has saying, like, there's a bunch of different like support forum posts where people kind of mad, like they're wanting to remove things or add things to the page. And Shopify was like, listen, we handle a ton of money each year. We have all this data. We know what works. We know what doesn't work. And so what we've done is we've used all the data that we have and we've designed something based off of numbers that we have that works. And you're just going to have to use it.
Yeah, and they're constantly improving that too. Yeah. It's not something that's static. Like, you might think that adding or removing this thing from your checkout page is going to improve, just make things better for whatever reason, but are you actually going to go through and watch that data over time and A/B test it and do all the things that Shopify is doing? They have a full team of people that work on this as their jobs.
Yeah.
It's really... I always thought that was hilarious when clients wouldn't do things like that, because it's like, how full of yourself do you think you are?
Yeah. And I think some,
how full of yourself are you?
To some of a degree, it's some people, like a lot of, it's like a certain type of client that like that needs to tinker. So you show them one thing and then they're going to change at least one thing about it. Like maybe something small, but they're going to change something about it. I think it was actually Max Temkin on the Dubai Friday show. He was talking about this. They'll actually put together like one of the pitches they have. So they'll be pitching something to some client. And so what they'll do is they'll put together something that's just totally outlandish and outrageous. And the client will 90% of the time change something about that. And then they'll say, you know what? You're completely right. We're sold on this, but I think we're going to take the feedback you gave us and roll with it. You know what I mean? So they're kind of steering the person that just needs to change something into changing something that they weren't actually, going to use anyway, which I thought was actually pretty hilarious.
Right.
I was like, what a pro
tip. That's funny. You'll have to send me a link to that episode.
Pro tip. I'll try to find it for the show notes, but I thought that was pretty funny. But yeah, it's just some people just need to tinker.
Yeah, it's very true. And I mean, I understand that urge, I guess, as somebody who is in this profession because of my need to tinker, right?
Yeah.
But at the same time, there is a certain point where I feel like with payments especially, it can be really, really good to trust experts who have looked at a lot of data.
Yeah,
for a long time.
I completely agree. And another thing that Stripe released recently, I think it was called Stripe Element or Stripe Elements.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. It's just like a widget-based thing. So basically, you just include the JavaScript and then you put an element, like one element in the page. And then they basically build out like a really feature complete credit card form. So if you're not using Stripe Checkout, you obviously still have to contact Stripe, generate a card token, have it come back and do all that stuff.
It's all the same as using Stripe any other way.
Right.
It's just a new interface for it, basically.
Yeah, so Element kind of takes that work out of your hands, or the majority of the work out of your hands. And then what it does is it builds this really nice looking form that's feature complete. It's great. So I'm using it in the admin side of Design Collective for when stores are managing their membership information. I'm using it and it's pretty much just flawless. It works great. Took me like 10 minutes to plug in and I was like, well, it's done. Now I can do all the other stuff I need to do. I don't have to reinvent the wheel every time. And eventually I'll be reworking the checkout flow to use that instead of a home rolled form. Just because, again, you know, Stripe knows what they're doing when it comes to this stuff. So I'm going to trust them.
Yep, definitely. They know what they're doing and they're continuing to improve it. I think those points together make a super powerful combination.
Yeah. And if they're improving it, that means I don't have to improve it. So that's just one less thing I had to think about and do, which I'm all for.
Yeah. I mean, that in a lot of ways, that's kind of the same sort of stuff I love about Heroku. Because as somebody who is doing all the technical side of this company stuff by myself, not having to worry so much about my servers is hugely important. This was actually underscored for me, I think like a week or two ago, at 3 a.m., I got a series of emails from Heroku saying, hey, your database on your production server is messed up. The hard drive has failed or something. I don't recall.
It was like a physical...
Stuff has gone wrong.
Okay.
Things are going badly on this physical device that your box is on right now. But they said, okay, we're going to fix this. We just wanted you to know. And then I got a couple more emails over the course of the next little while of them just saying, okay, yeah, now this has been migrated over and everything is back up and running on this different hardware and you're set. And I just woke up to those emails in the morning and I was like, wow, that would have been really bad if I weren't on Heroku, right? Because, I mean, statistically speaking, it's very unlikely that I would have had the same failure or whatever. But that can and does happen. That is a real thing that happens. And if you're not fully available all the time to deal with that because you're a single person, then something like Heroku is really, really invaluable. Something that is paying attention to what's going on in terms of security and zero days that come out and automatically patching stuff, automatically updating things. And of course, none of this is to say that Heroku in particular is perfect or the best solution for any of this, but more that the idea there of having a service that just has your back on that DevOps stuff or on that payment stuff or whatever that thing is can just be so, so helpful.
Well, it's kind of like the idea of delegation, right? So
yeah,
it's kind of like we're both in the management roles. You know, if we had a bigger, if their companies were bigger, we would have developers working for us. And so instead of having to do everything yourself, you're delegating those responsibilities to, in this case, another service. And I think it's very important because, like you said, as a single person or, you know, even people that are working on a small team, it's really important to figure out, okay, what is worth my limited time? Because I have, my time is limited, and what is worth delegating to somebody else?
I think it's really funny that you're putting it in terms of delegation as if you were delegating to another employee, because developers always joke about how our job is to automate ourselves out of a job.
Yeah.
But this is actually what we're talking about right here. That is literally what's happened, is that we are automating ourselves out of jobs, or that we're really concentrating those jobs down in a lot of cases to like single companies like Stripe, like Shopify.
And you can kind of think of them like, I mean, they're not really your employees, but you're paying them for a service, right? So they need to provide you something.
They're your robot employees.
Because you're exchanging money for a service. And essentially that's what you do with employees as well. You exchange money for their time. And then you just, you know, depending on what their job is supposed to be, you can kind of delegate those things to them. So that's kind of how I think about it, right? Thinking about Stripe, thinking about Heroku, thinking about, everything else that I, what do I use? Pretty much everything goes to the Heroku. I mean, my Elasticsearch stuff, my database stuff, my Redis stuff, it's all there.
Yeah, same. Everything is Heroku. I'm all in on pipelines.
Yeah, that's pretty great. But that's how I think about it, is like, I have very little time in the grand scheme of things, right? And
right.
There are things that the people that I work with want me to do or need me to do. Features, whatever, bug fixes, stuff like that. So that's where my time needs to be spent, not on the other things. And I think, you know, if we get bigger, that we could always hire somebody for that. But right now we don't have a need to, really. So that's how I think about it. Just delegating those tasks to somebody else because I don't have the time to do it.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, honestly, if Heroku didn't exist and I was just trying to do this straight on just, you know, normal Unix boxes somewhere, I'm not sure that I would be able to handle Nest Notes at the scale it's at in terms of server complexity and orchestration stuff just by myself, in addition to doing all the development work. That would be, I mean, I'm honestly thinking about that, and that would be a lot of additional time. So yeah. Heroku really is potentially saving me from having to hire another person in this particular case.
Yeah, I mean, so like everything that you would need to do being, you'd have to set up your permanent storage, which would be your database in this case. You'd have to make sure that the backups are running for that. You'd have to make sure there's some sort of redundancy there with the backups. You would obviously have to worry about security. You would have to, I mean, the list just keeps going. And that's just one piece of the puzzle.
I would have to have much better monitoring and alerting systems around like hardware failures than I currently do.
Yeah, that's true.
Certainly. And systems to like transparently migrate things. I wouldn't even be able to really do that. I also wouldn't have a lot of the deploy conveniences that I have now.
Talking like the pipeline chain and all that stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, all that stuff is just hooked into Slack automatically and I get all sorts of messages and I can run database migrations with single commands. It's just really a lot of cool, very cool stuff and super time saving stuff that you do get from these sorts of services.
Yeah, I guess I don't really think about it that often, but I do take it for granted, like especially the pipelines like you're talking about, and especially recently the release phase update that Heroku added. So in my proc file, I just say every time that there's a deploy, run my migrate tasks. And sure, things are, you know, I'm just deploying left and right all day long, every day. I push the master, that thing goes to staging, checks out on staging. You know, it's going to production, and it's crazy that it's just that easy for me, having not a ton of DevOps experience, that I'm deploying to production, you know, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 times a day sometimes.
So do you actually have the full setup where it will automatically deploy all the way to production, or do you have to confirm something when it's at staging?
Not all the way to production. I check it out manually on staging first, just because I'm paranoid about it.
It's the same thing.
Yeah. So what I'll end up doing is I'll end up like cloning a copy from production down to staging. And then I'll do that somewhat often, maybe once every couple of weeks or something, just to make sure that the data is relatively there. And, I check stuff out there and I do a lot of other things. Like there's like no actual emails getting sent out. So I'm not even trying to like hijack emails and send them to one address on staging. They just don't get sent. They go into, I think I'm using Letter Opener, it's called, to catch any email and stuff like that, just because I'm paranoid about like what happens if, because I've had companies accidentally like send out an email and then they're like, oh, we're sorry.
Oh yeah.
That was meant for the test, the test server.
Right.
But yeah, so I'm pretty paranoid about all that stuff. So staging, it just stops at staging and I check everything out as much as I can anyway. And then from there, it's just a one click deploy to production.
Yeah. It sounds very similar to what I've got going on. I just use a bunch of, I just have like a folder in PA with a bunch of HTTP requests that get sent off to the Heroku API.
I still need to do that. I haven't done that yet. That sounds very convenient though. I'm still going into, it's funny because, most of my work, actually all three things that I'm working on right now are all on Heroku. So I have a different browser for each one. So I'm logged into Knight's Heroku stuff on Safari, for example, and watching Nature's Heroku stuff on Firefox.
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
Oh man.
Cause I have two auth set up for all of those. So I'm sick of doing the two auth thing.
Right. Yeah. It's a big hassle. And if you're switching between projects a lot, that actually does start eating time out of your day, or at least time out of your sanity meter.
Right. It's more frustrating than anything, but
yeah,
I have been taking Heroku for granted a lot. I should send them a thank you note.
I think we just did.
Thanks, Heroku. If anyone hears this, I'll tweet at you as well.
Yeah. Sponsor us.
Don't give me anything for free.
Give you a free ad.
You guys are earning your money. Don't give me anything for free. You guys are earning it. I want to pay you money. Well, my boss wants to pay you money for your services, but no, it's great. It's cool. It's something that, you know, allows me to focus on other things. So, I mean, yep. Anytime I talk about Heroku, people bring up Now, the service called Now, the website's now.sh. People bring it up and they're like, oh, you should just be using this instead. And I've used it now a little bit and it's see what I did there? It's okay. Like it's good. I mean, like it's fine. You know what I mean? If it's in your workflow, it's fine. For me, Heroku, just has more, like the pipelines are amazing. The deploy chains are amazing. It just works really well. I'm using Now, like I'm helping a friend out with some stuff. He's got a business idea. So I hooked him up with like, a couple of different test sites to play around with, different test EMSs to play around with. And I'm using Now to do that. And it seems fine. It seems like Docker is okay. You know, I don't have anything against it, but I think for longer term projects, I think once you have the initial setup, with Heroku going, it's just, you can't beat it.
It's really good. And it's gotten so much better in the last 18 months, I would say 12 to 18 months. Just some really, really cool stuff, especially now that there's Heroku Redis and everything. It just makes so many of the tasks that I have to deal with in particular very easy right now. So I'm loving it. I'll certainly check out Now in the future too, but I just don't have time at the moment.
Right. It's just something.
It's just not
something else.
Something that I have something that's working really well. And that's, I guess, one of our recurring themes is if you have a tool that is working really well for you, don't be super anxious to just jump to the next thing just because it's the next thing.
Right.
That doesn't mean that it's the right thing. You still might be using the right thing.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. It's exactly. It's kind of like, I mean, I've been talking about Elixir a lot. And I know there's a lot of talk about like people just jumping to Elixir because it's a fad or whatever. You know, people are like, oh, it's just going to go away. It's going to burn out. It's going to whatever. And that's fine if people have those sentiments. But I mean, at the same token, like the Knight site hosts a pretty good amount of traffic, the biggest site I've ever worked on, you know, and it's run with Rails and it's still super fast. You know, the response time is still from the API has not slowed down. I still work on it every week. You know, things are getting bigger. We're changing, we're adding features and all that stuff. And it's just as fast as the day we released it. So with that, you know, it's kind of like, okay. So Discord released that, blog post recently talking about, you know, scaling Elixir to, what was it, like 5 million concurrent connections or something like that?
Something like that. It's a very, very large number.
And some obscene number. And there was a tweet. I'm going to have to dig this up for the show notes. I'm going to see if I can find it anyway. But there was a tweet that someone sent out. And he's an Elixir developer. And he said something to the effect of like, yeah, this is really cool. That's an obscene amount of traffic. That's just ridiculous amount of traffic. And there are only maybe a few handfuls of websites in the world that need to worry about that sort of scale. And
yeah, a couple dozen,
right?
Maybe.
Yeah. I mean, I'm sure there's,
and that's probably reaching.
I'm sure there's stuff we don't know about, but I mean, 5 million concurrent is unreal. And basically what he said was, if you're going to switch to something, don't switch because of scale problems, because that's not a problem. That's a problem you're probably not going to have. It's something that you're probably not going to
do. Don't switch because of scale problems unless you actually have scale problems right now.
Yeah. Yeah.
I would add that.
Yeah. Unless you have the problem right now, that's a bad reason to pick your next stack. And I thought that was, you know, it just seems like there's a lot of, especially in the Elixir ecosystem, there's a lot of people like, oh, it's really vast. And it is. And that's cool. But that's not that shouldn't be the selling point in terms of like why you would pick that over Rails. I don't think, because there are tons of Rails sites out there that are fast and they don't have, they're not having all these crazy scaling problems. And it seems like companies that have hit those problems, either A, they invest more time in like, okay, well, we need to make some architectural decisions into some design decisions, more importantly, I think, or B, we completely move to another setup. Like thinking about Twitter, for example, you know, they moved off of Rails. But like, look at GitHub. GitHub is fast. It's on Rails. They've been on Rails forever. Shopify is serving.
They were on Rails too for like until yesterday or something ridiculous.
Yeah, right?
They were on Rails too for so long.
Yeah. And then Shopify, I'll have to find this too. I'm going to have to do a lot of digging on Twitter for the show notes. But so I saw someone recently say that Shopify handles something like 80,000 requests per second and they're on Rails. They've been on Rails since like before version 1, if I remember right.
I'm really hoping that Shopify kind of does for Ruby and Rails what Facebook did for PHP. We may have discussed this before, but with their what's it called, HipHop?
I don't think we have. What's HipHop?
I think that's what it's called. There was a rebranding. I can't remember if that's the old name or the new name, but basically it lets folks write PHP and it gets compiled down to bytecode.
Oh.
So it runs ridiculously, ludicrously fast, even faster than PHP already is.
That's interesting.
But I don't mean necessarily that exact thing happening for Ruby,
right.
But a big player who is really, really invested in making Ruby and Rails faster would be a very, very good thing to see about right about this time.
Oh, yeah. It would be such a huge investment for them to change. And I'm sure they wouldn't do it all at once. It would be like microservice style or something like that, you know. But it seems like it would make sense, especially Shopify being so large, to invest into
the resources.
Yeah, they have the resources to do it. So
public company.
Yeah. Yep. But that would be really cool, I think, because Ruby, I think I like it. I don't have any dislike for it. I don't hate it. I just think that the way that Elixir is set up and I guess it's like a dirty functional nature because you can rebind variables and stuff. It seems like mentally it just works with how I want to make things. So it feels like less like I'm trying to shove a foot into a shoe that's a little bit too small. Like I can make it work, but it's not great. You know, it doesn't look great.
Right. Yeah.
It's not very functional. That's kind of what I feel like when I'm writing a lot of Ruby. And in on the flip side, when I'm writing Elixir, it feels just more natural to how my brain works. So that's really why I made the choice in the long run, is because it feels like a good fit for me.
Yeah, definitely. Ruby was a really, really good fit for me for a long time. And I found over the last probably 6 months to a year, I'm more often finding myself thinking, I really wish I was writing this in X other language.
Right.
But still, most of the time, it's relatively pleasant to work in.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a great...
And I know it really well. So like those are pretty heavy weights in favor of me continuing to use it, right?
Right. Yeah. It's just kind of like I built that PC recently, right? And so there's like times where I want to tinker and there's times where I don't want to tinker. And I don't want to tinker on my... You can't really tinker that much with a Mac anyway. But I don't want to tinker with that because I just need it to be...
Well...
I just need it to work and I need it to be productive. You know what I mean? There's a time and a place. And I feel like... now that we've been doing this for a while, I'm less likely, I mean, obviously I say this and I just have picked up Elixir and I'm planning on writing it for a long time, but I'm less likely to make drastic changes just because I want to find something that works and I want to stick with it and just be productive. My end goal is to be productive, not necessarily be enthralled with the new technology. That's like exactly the opposite of how I was when I, even a few years in, I was more likely to make a change to a different technology because I thought it was cool for whatever reason and not because I thought it would actually make me more productive, if that makes sense.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, like I was saying earlier, I think the reason that a lot of people get into programming is because they love tinkering.
Yeah.
And so it can be really hard to get out of that mindset.
Yeah.
When it's actually time to buckle down and get stuff done or work on something for a long period of time.
Yeah. Yeah. I completely agree.
Cause it's really easy to make a decision. Oh, I'm going to try out a new language, especially when it's a weekend project or it's a small offshoot project kind of thing. But when it's something you're going to be working on for years or hopefully for years.
Hopefully.
Yeah. You want to be really, really certain that you're making a decision that you're going to be able to live with, even if it's not maybe the coolest thing.
Yeah, I agree. I think I landed pretty lucky, you know, with Ruby and like kind of like walking into that ecosystem first without getting, I mean, granted there's JavaScript, but to me it's not necessarily in the same in my mind because I've done some Node. I mean, I've talked a lot about Node in the past, you know, my excursion into happy JS land, but I don't really use JavaScript for server-side stuff. So for me, JavaScript was, I came into JavaScript through UI things.
Sure.
And a lot of the programming things I did with JavaScript was really based around handling state and handling UI changes and stuff like that. And so now that there are tools like Vue that I use for that, I can do things with JavaScript really well, I think, because I dove deeper like into the backend side of things, which I think encouraged more of a classical understanding of programming, I think. And then that kind of translates across to JavaScript, right? Does that make sense?
I think so. For me, Node is an interesting thing because it was right around the time that I got my first programming job when Node was starting to become really prominent. This would be like 2010-ish, my first full-time programming job, 2010, 2011, mm-hmm. One of those. And so I was always like really aware of it and followed along with it, but I've never actually written out like a big app in Node. It's always been kind of microservicey stuff for like, I'll throw together a Lambda function or whatever. But I've never actually done or even really had the desire to build out big things, big projects in JavaScript server side.
For me, I guess the barrier to entry was I was paralyzed by choices. There's too many choices. I didn't know right. enough to make those choices. I didn't think I knew enough to make those choices, so I didn't. And I went with Ruby instead because Rails was like, hey, here you go. This is what you get. And I was like, thank you, you know, because that's all I had mentally available to know about was what they gave me. And that's kind of what got me into the backend world was because they gave me a plate with all the tools that I needed on it. You know, they didn't like send me into a hardware store and like, hey, databases on aisle 12. I'll see ya. You know, like right. forced me to walk all the way to right. the back. And I was like, there's so many things. I was getting distracted by so many things. But that I guess that's another reason why I'm pulled into like Elixir more and more is because it comes with OTP. And so that handles the majority of anything I need to do.
What's OTP?
OTP is a framework that comes like that comes with Erlang, but it's kind of what handles the async stuff, the queuing stuff, the talking between services.
Gotcha.
Yeah. Okay. So instead of using something like Redis, you could just use ETS, which is a built-in Redis-like store that just runs on Beam. So essentially, instead of like reaching out to other third-party tools, it's just kind of like there's tools that are available within the ecosystem that you can use instead. And that's kind of, you know, that's a lot like what Rails handed us too. On like more of a, I mean, so like when I jumped into Rails, I didn't really know SQL, but I had Active Record, which was more accessible to me, you know?
Oh yeah. I mean, that's most people. Like an ORM.
Yeah, exactly. And so I guess that's like, I got the similar feeling when I jumped into Elixir and I was like, oh, they have a thing for things. And the things that they have are things that I typically need to do, right?
Right.
And so it just kind of makes it easier because then I'm not, again, given too many choices and feel like I'll never get the hang of something. Or really, I mean, like the Node stuff kind of discouraged me a little bit because there's so many different options. Same with when I was jumping into React a little farther, I peeked behind the curtain. I'm like, good Lord, it's like an Amazon warehouse back here. You know what I mean? Like, okay, how do I want to handle CSS? Oh, well, if you go to the Northwest quadrant, you'll find 10 square miles of libraries that you can use, you know?
First you got to pick your language,
right?
from the 30 that we have available.
Yeah. And then you got to pick your styling paradigm, and then you got to like figure out, okay, which one has the biggest community and hope that that's a good sign, you know?
Right. Yeah.
So
I find front end stuff like that to be the most time consuming and in many ways, the most difficult part of programming these days.
Oh yeah.
It's just dealing with front end things. There's so much of everything.
Yeah, there's so much of everything.
Even within like the Vue ecosystem, which is fantastic and I love, but there's still so much everything, which is great, but also so much.
But also not great at the same time.
It's just a lot. Yeah. It's a lot, and it's tough to keep up with when you are trying to keep up with back end technologies and front end technologies and I think that's a big part of the reason that I'm such a big fan of sticking with tools when they're working for you.
Yeah.
Is because that just kind of alleviates a little bit of that pressure on yourself, at least.
Yeah, it does. It does. And I mean, it'll become a little bit easier when our teams grow a little bit, because then we'll just have more man hours, or well, I shouldn't say man. We'll have more people hours, right? To be able to just decipher that stuff. I think partly what makes it hard is that we're doing both backend and front end. So there's so much to know about both that it's impossible to know, you know, like know everything new that's coming out, or like any all the new techniques, or like the quote unquote blessed techniques, you know. That seems like that changes super often now these days. I don't know. It's kind of like one of those things where, again, I'm less and less enthralled with a cool piece of technology because it's cool and novel, I think. And now I'm more like, will this actually help me get this thing out the door so that way I can go out the door being outside and away from my screens, you know what I mean?